Good morning. Welcome to Dig in the Dirt. I'm Ann Goldin, and this week I am pleased to have as my guest Evelyn Alemany, who is an international judge from America in Bloom. We're going to find all about that program. She has judged communities in 6 countries and 83 cities, including in Canada. Good morning, Evelyn. I think that most of the people listening will have never heard of America in Bloom. And so just tell me what that is.
Okay. America in Bloom is a national awards program that gives participating towns awards for their efforts in improving quality of life. And it's an offshoot from programs in other countries. For example, in Canada, there's a program called Communities in Bloom. In Britain, there's Britain in Bloom. In Scotland, they have Scotland in Bloom. In Ireland, they have a program called Tidy Towns. So all over North America and in Europe and even in Japan, they have these so-called In Bloom programs that actually provide awards for towns that are doing a great job in providing a good quality of life for the residents.
Okay, so, well, Bloom sounds like it has to do with flowers. And what does that have to do with quality of life?
Well, certainly flowers are important to our quality of life, but there are many ways in which a town can bloom. And what we will do is we'll evaluate on 8 criteria. 4 of those have to do with horticulture, and 4 are other things like community involvement. How engaged are your citizens? Another category would be tidiness. How clean are your streets? Mm. Are you on top of graffiti removal? Another one is heritage preservation. How are you looking after your history, your older buildings? And another one is environmental efforts. So what are you doing to clean up your environment and keep it nice? And then the horticultural categories are urban forestry. What are you doing to take care of your trees? Floral displays, and that, of course, would be your hanging baskets and what everybody thinks of when they hear America in Bloom.
Yeah.
Landscaped areas, and then turf and ground cover. And turf and ground cover involves things like your parks, your sports fields, your golf courses.
Okay, so there was another section that's about... what am I thinking of? Oh, about schools? There's a whole part of educating kids?
Yes, that comes under the municipal sector. And what we do in all those 8 criteria that I mentioned, we look at the municipal sector. That includes all the city buildings and parks, hospitals and schools. We also look at the commercial sector. That would be all your businesses. And then we look at the residential sector. So really we're looking at the whole spectrum of things that make up your town.
So that
and schools are certainly a part of that.
Okay, so when a city decides that they're going to compete in this program, do a bunch of judges descend on the community and go with a fine-tooth comb? How does it go?
That's a really good question. It's actually very friendly. It's a very collaborative process. When a town decides that they would like to be part of the program, they would register, and they can register by February 28th for that year's program. And then we will work with them to identify 2 days when they would like to have their judges come. So what happens is the two people will come to their town, and they will be toured around by the person who is organizing that effort for their town. And there's a lot of discussion, a lot of give and take, because the judges have been to other towns in a similar size population. So they've seen similar successes, similar problems, and there's this wonderful coaching and mentoring relationship that evolves from that visit. And so the towns are left with a really a lot of good ideas, and then in October they get a written evaluation from the judges that can be anywhere from 20 to 40 pages long that highlights what they're doing well and also areas where they might improve. So it's like a really nice consultant's report that they can use to plan their future efforts and as a guide.
Okay, so how many cities participate in any given year?
Well, it just depends who signs up. It has ranged anywhere from 20 to more than 50.
And then you said something about cities of comparable size. Are like New York City wouldn't be competing against Astoria, Oregon?
Exactly. We have two levels of awards. One is the population category, and in that award, towns are grouped with other towns in a similar population size, so it levels the playing field. And then we have another set of awards that we call criteria awards, and these are given over all the population categories. So, for example, if you won the Heritage Preservation Award, that would mean that the judges had felt that your town was doing the best job of heritage preservation over all the cities that had entered that year.
Mm-hmm. And what do you get when you win that or any of the awards?
Well, we have some really beautiful plaques and trophies that we give out. Plus, we do a lot of media work. We send out press releases and put information on our website for the towns. So they can use that as bragging rights, as a way to build up the reputation of the town. They'll use it to support the Chamber of Commerce, the Visitors Bureau, and even realtors will use that as a way to market the town.
Uh-huh. Okay. And now there have been two cities that have participated in Oregon, Lake Oswego and Echo. Very different, a rural and an urban urban cities in Astoria, in Oregon. And how do they do?
Well, you can be very proud of Lake Oswego and Echo because they were both national winners.
Oh, wow. And now in the population question or the population grouping, is it, are there lots of categories? I mean, it's not just huge and little. There's gradations.
Oh, there are lots, and it really depends on how many cities are entered, but we will typically have between 5 and 8 population categories.
Okay, all right, good. So that sounds, because, I mean, in Oregon, you know, the biggest city is not that big compared to a lot of East Coast cities.
Exactly. And, you know, the other thing is that we do take climate into consideration, and you're not competing so much against the other cities, but we look at what you're doing with what you have. So, for example, with Echo, Oregon, they're out in the desert. Mm-hmm. You know, they get 10 inches of rain a year, but they're doing remarkable things. So we're just so proud of Echo. In fact, they competed internationally this year.
Oh, wow. So they've done more than one thing with American Bloom.
Yes, they have been in the American Bloom program, I believe, 4 or 5 years. They've won twice, and this year they decided to go into international competition with communities in bloom.
Okay, so what are they doing? Like, why are they so interested in this? What's got their attention?
Well, they found that these programs are a great way to bring everybody in the town together to work for visible and exciting changes that are lasting. And as we've seen with the European programs that have been in existence for more than 50 years, it can become a way of life. It's exciting, it's positive, it's so much fun to work on these programs year after year and see just how far you can bring your community.
So how long has American Bloom been in existence?
Well, this year we're celebrating our 10th year. We were founded in 2001, had our first program then. And since then, we've had nearly 200 towns participate.
Mm-hmm. I see some of our communities in the Lower Columbia River region as obvious participants. Astoria is celebrating its 200th anniversary right now, and in 2011, and we have a huge interest in historic preservation, and it's a beautiful area. Why not, brag it to the whole country?
Exactly. We had one town in Ohio called Coshocton, and they were celebrating their bicentennial this year. So So they were in American Bloom for the second year just because of that. But last year they had their first entry, and they really wanted the judges to come and give them ideas on how to improve town so they'd be ready for that bicentennial, and they really did it. They did the job.
That is awesome. That's really great. So let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more. You are listening to Dig in the Dirt. I'm Ann Goldin, and I'm with Evelyn Alamari. She is from a judge from America in Bloom, and we'll be right back. Well, we're back. You're listening to Dig in the Dirt. I'm Ann Goldin, and I'm with Evelyn Alamani from America in Bloom. Okay, so one of the things that I saw on the very elaborate and beautiful website of America in Bloom is a whole section on grants. There are links to, it was more than I even thought I wanted to print out. There were probably, 20 or 30 links to grants that communities can get, whether it's for educators, for schools, for municipalities, for anything to do with this program. It's a great, great link just for that.
Exactly. And our website has a lot of terrific resources. One of the resources that I'm really excited about is a white paper written by Dr. Charlie Hall from Texas A&M University. And Charlie is a horticultural economist, and he's been studying the benefits of good landscaping. And he outlines it in this white paper. So I encourage your people to go to the America in Bloom website. It's americainbloom.org. And just download that white paper, because he makes the case for good landscaping. He says when you're surrounded by good landscaping, it reduces your blood pressure. It helps children with ADD to calm down. It helps people in hospitals heal better and faster. And, of course, good landscaping improves our property values. And there are also studies that show that people are more connected to communities that are beautiful than they are otherwise. So, his bottom line is, he says, good landscaping is not a luxury, it's a necessity. And so that's just another one of the good things available on that website.
That's great. And there are certainly many examples of bad landscaping, topping trees and lousy use of the wrong plants in the wrong place. And one wonders who decided to put, that group of plants in the highway between, the north and south traffic, or any number of things. So I would like to talk about the criteria. I pulled up 8 criteria that are used in evaluating a community, and I thought let's talk about those. I mean, I know you mentioned them a little, but I would like to talk about them a little bit more, because these are the things that anybody, whether homeowner, apartment dweller, or, a city manager or a mayor or city council or a county can think about when they're looking at their the place that they're in charge of.
Well, exactly. And if you think about these just in terms of your own home, say you were getting your home ready to sell, you would think about all these things. If you're a business and you're thinking about, I want to attract people to come into my store and buy things. If you're a town and you say, I want to make my town inviting so that businesses will come here, so that people want to live here, you want to address all these 8 criteria. So I'll be glad to go through those 8 for you.
Good.
The first is tidiness. And that would cover green spaces, medians, streets, sidewalks, curbs. You know how sometimes you might have weeds growing in curbs, issues like graffiti, vacant lots that might have weeds in them that could be turned into pocket parks, So all those tidiness efforts, things like even having your fire hydrants painted and your light poles painted, if you take a look around your town, you notice those things, and subconsciously they make an impression. If everything is fresh and clean, you feel one way. When paint's peeling and there's graffiti, you feel another way. So tidiness is real important. Environmental awareness, we can't say enough about that. That includes how you handle your waste, how you're doing your recycling, how are you handling your electronic waste, what's your policy for spraying chemicals, herbicides, pesticides, what are you doing as far as keeping your water clean and protecting your water source. If you have lakes and rivers, how are you protecting those? And, of course, things like environmentally friendly transportation using bicycles, electronic cars. In some towns, they have police patrols on bicycles. So environmental awareness is the second criteria. The third is community involvement. And I love this criteria because it's really all about engaging people who live in the town and getting the three sectors, the municipal, the residential, and the commercial, working together on projects that have long-term benefit for the entire community. The fourth criteria is heritage preservation, and in that criterion, we're looking for museums, archives, books about the town, how you're preserving and restoring old buildings, adaptive reuse of buildings, cemeteries, monuments, all the things that honor the heritage. And it might not just be built heritage. It might be your rural areas where you're preserving open space, because open space is a really important part of our heritage as well. And if we can preserve green belts around our cities, that's a great thing to do.
You know, that's a great point, and people often forget that when they're thinking about what's important in a city. It's all the other side, all the hardscape.
Right, and natural heritage is real important. Our rivers, our lakes, our streams, our forests, those are part of our natural heritage that need to be preserved. So then we move on to the horticultural sectors, and urban forestry means the trees within our cities. So those are our street trees, the trees in parks, and the trees in our yards, and we look at how we're maintaining those. A lot of places don't understand the need to have a tree inventory. And what a tree inventory is just a database that says, here's where I have street trees, here's how old they are, here's their condition. And what that does is it gives a town a baseline on how much money they're going to need to maintain those trees, because trees need to be trimmed. You know, there's leaf pickup in the fall. There's all these issues. Trees have a finite life, and they need to be replaced. So that tree inventory helps towns to schedule maintenance and to plan for replacement.
And then, assuming that we have a tree assessment, we also, when we're looking at tree replacement, replacing suitable trees.
Exactly.
Right.
And we encourage towns to have a list of preferred trees for residents. So if I'm moving to your town from another part of the country and I don't know what kind of trees to plant, I could go to that list and say, yep, these are the ones that I'll look for at the garden center. Mm. And that's really important because we want to be sure that our trees are healthy and that they're the right tree for the right place, that we're planting short-growing trees away from power lines the power company doesn't come in and top them, and just choosing the right trees for our environment.
Right. Well, certainly when people move in our area, people are moving here all the time from other parts of the country, and people have their favorite plants from wherever they were, and whatever grew well in Phoenix or New York City may do really poorly here and would be a poor choice. So if there were a list like this, which I don't think we have in Astoria, that would avoid a lot of heartache and extra money spent in all kinds of ways.
Exactly. And the interesting thing is that there are plants that might be great in Phoenix, but maybe they're invasive in your area. So that's another reason why that list of preferred plants is really a good idea. The other thing I wanted to touch on urban forestry is an experience that Fayetteville, Arkansas had. They had a just a horrific ice storm a few years back, and they took out 1,800 tractor trailers full of tree limbs and broken trees. They were able to use their database to go to FEMA, and this is the value of what we lost.
Oh, it's because they had a list.
Because
they had
the tree inventory.
Uh-huh. And so then FEMA was able to actually give them the amount of money that equaled what they lost instead of, I think we had 10 acres over there.
Yes.
I think we had a hurricane a few years ago, and I think that's what we did, is we estimated.
Right. And if you have that inventory, then it's like, you know, if your house burns down, but you've photographed every room.
Uh-huh.
You can go to the insurance company and say, here's what I had, here's what I need to replace.
Right, right. So Fayetteville was able to really recoup their losses.
Exactly.
That's great. Okay, well, so let's move on now then to landscape areas, which is what people really think about.
Yeah, exactly. So landscaped areas are like your shrubs, your borders, and it includes not just plant material, but also hardscapes. So things like sidewalks, walls, lighting elements, benches, all those good things that work together to make a beautiful space.
Now, there's something about the blend of native and introduced plants.
Yeah, we do. We do encourage the use of native plants for a lot of reasons. One is, of course, that they're lower maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
They usually need less water and less fertilizer, and you know, they're the ones that want to grow in your area. They'll work with the soil that you have, and that's important.
Mm-hmm. Well, right. I don't know. You know, if you go somewhere and you see the same plants that you saw at home, you think, wait a minute, this isn't the same environment. Why are those plants there? Well, it's because, you know, the landscape architect likes whatever, you know, Weigelia. So everybody's got Weigelia wherever they are. And maybe it doesn't really look well. Maybe it doesn't really thrive in your area, you know.
That's exactly right. When my mother moved to California from New Jersey, she thought, well, it's like springtime here every day. I can grow everything I had in New Jersey. Well, that just didn't work at all.
What did she try to grow?
Peonies, hostas.
Forsythia,
you know, it just wouldn't work.
Oh, so it was too hot, right?
It was too hot, and there are things that need the winter chill.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's
funny. Some plants just like to rest and be cold.
Well, right, like lilacs.
Exactly, and if you can't give them that, they won't grow. They won't be happy.
Right, no, you won't get flowers. Okay, well, the next category is floral displays, and that, you know, obviously people think about that. Well, that seems obvious.
Well, that's the obvious one that everybody thinks of, and that's the wow factor. That's your beautiful window boxes and hanging baskets, your flower beds, all the things that make us really, really happy when we see them. And you know, and another article on our website does talk about how having good flower displays will help improve business in commercial districts. So that's something to think about. And I also wanted to mention real quick that I have compiled all the best ideas from all our cities that have ever been in the program in the last 10 years into a book that is arranged by these 8 criteria, and it's called 10 Years of Best Ideas. So if anybody's interested in that, it's available to order from the American Bloom website.
Oh, great. Okay, so the last area is turf and ground cover. So that's
right. Turf and ground cover is, of course, the lawn in front of your house. It's your parks, your sports fields. It's your golf courses. And, you know, good turf is important, but in a lot of places they will overdo turf. And so what that means is that you're doing a lot of mowing. And, of course, mowers put pollution into the air. You know, and we look for ways that we can reduce the amount of turf by introducing ground covers, wildflowers, different heights of mowing places that may not need so much mowing, just to mow them less often.
Mm-hmm.
And we look at golf courses, their fertilizing, their irrigation. We also look at the climate. You know, maybe you're in a dry climate, and you need to restrict your water use, so maybe there are different kinds of turf that you might consider. So that's the turf section.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, and so When people register, if they decide that they want their city in, does this have to come from somebody like a city manager? Is that or
no?
A city
it can
council?
Come from. It can come from anyone, and it varies depending on the town. Sometimes it will come from the city. Sometimes it comes from the Chamber of Commerce. Sometimes from a garden center, or the Visitors Bureau, or a garden club. It really, we don't have any requirement on that. One time we had a gentleman who just decided he was going to put his city in, and he took care of it. So.
Okay, is there a fee to register?
Yes, there is. There is an entry fee, and it's a sliding scale based on population. So, yeah, there is a fee. And okay. What that covers is the judge's travel.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense. Right, if you have to come from the East Coast or wherever the judges would come from. So that's what it pays for. Yeah, and I think I'd like you to finish up by giving us a pep talk of why people might want to get involved, whatever community that they're in, whether they're in Bay Center or Lake Quinault or Longview, Washington, or Astoria, Oregon, why they might want to look at this as something to do for their community.
Okay, well, you know, I used to be the chair of the town council here in Elfin Forest, California, and when one of our residents came to me and said, we should be in America in Bloom. I said, I have no idea what that is, but if you say we should do this, then we will. And it was a life-changing experience, not just for me, but for the people in our community. We got together. We thought we were a close-knit community, but being in America in Bloom brought us together in ways that we had no idea we could ever be together. People made new friends. They made new alliances. They learned things about the community, even though they'd lived here 20, 25 years. They learned new things. We discovered things about our history that we had never known before. We had a dinner where 90% of everyone who lives here showed up and brought food. We landscaped our roadways. We tossed out pounds and pounds of wildflower seeds. We did so many projects, and our community just sparkled from one end to the other. It was remarkable. And then we got our judge's evaluation in the fall. And, you know, we were the kind of community that was like, leave us alone and we'll handle everything. Well, they made some suggestions that made so much sense that by the next year, we were able to receive $100,000 in grants. We were able to get our county to close a road so we could turn it into a trail. And you can imagine in gridlocked Southern California, that is a huge feat. And not only did they close the road for us, they gave us money to fence it on both sides with a split rail fence. So we had amazing benefits from being part of America in Bloom. And I know that all across the country, I visited 83 towns in six countries now as an international judge. And everywhere I go, the towns tell us this is just life-changing. It's wonderful. It makes us look good. It makes us happy. It's good for business. And they just can't say enough good things about being in the program. And also the excitement that they get when they go to the symposium and awards in the fall to meet like-minded people from other towns.
Thank you very much. We are out of time. My guest has been Evelyn Alamani from America in Bloom. Check out their website at americainbloom.org. Thank you very much, Evelyn.
Thank you, Anne. It's been my pleasure.
Yes, it's really been a pleasure and very enlightening. You've been listening to Dig in the Dirt. Next week, Dig in the Dirt will return with a surprise guest.